Up first this hour, as we do each Tuesday, we welcome in our friend, writer Colin Fleming, whose latest book is terrific, as always, If You, brackets, Fabula, Fantasy, Effery, Hope. It's available everywhere. We'll talk more about that book next week, but we're talking sports today with Colin. Hello there, Mr. Fleming.
Hey, how's it going, Kimball?
Doing well, thank you. It's a beautiful day. I know you would prefer it to be cold, but this isn't bad. It's not terribly humid.
Yeah, no, it's the same here, probably. Maybe a little bit warmer. I think I sweat an inordinate amount. I don't understand it. I think I might have a problem.
Well, you're doing steps and walking all over creation. Of course you're going to perspire a little bit.
Yeah, but like you should see me after the first 2,000 stairs, and then I sit down on that island at the bottom outside of City Hall there, and I just, like, it's actually flowing. It's like rivulets coming off me. And like when you watch an NBA game, I don't think people sweat like at the end of the game as much as I do after just 2,000. So I'm concerned about it. And I read this article. So you'll see, you know how I drop and do the push-ups?
Right, right.
You'll see me doing this too. I read this article. There's a correlation. You probably start doing it too now.
Well, I've already been doing it. I know what you're going to bring up, and I smiled when I read it. I've been doing the balance work for about a year now. Yeah.
Oh, so I'm late to this particular dance, but I was reading the other day, and it's like, and the statistics were grim. So you're supposed to stand on one foot, and people who can't stand that way for 10 seconds, oh, it's crazy. It's like, are 800% more likely to die in the next 2 years. I'm like, oof. Oh, so I know this isn't in the spirit of the test, but I'm practicing so it doesn't sneak up on me. I'm a daily balance practicer now. So I run my stairs. I take a rest, I do my push-ups, and then you will see me like some bizarre dripping peacock on one leg. And then I'm like, well, I want you to be equally skilled on both legs. And I try and extend them. Like, yeah, 40 seconds. Who's rocking hard here, bitches?
Oh,
insane. But my mortality is just like, woo, going well.
Yeah, see, and I kind of flip-flop that because I've been doing the balance for a while, and I try to go a minute plus on each leg and see how long I can go. But I just, after you and taking your inspiration, now I'm trying to work in the push-ups as well. That's a little harder for me than standing on one leg.
When I started doing them, it was not good for my self-esteem. So then I talked to some other people, and they had, like, a similar experience. But I thought to myself, like, wow, you are an enfeebled man, Mr. Fleming. Like, this is kind of shameful. So now it's like, I'm not out there doing, like, 60 in a row, but I'll do, like, 20, and it adds up over the course of the day to, like, try to do a minimum of 50. But when I started, like, you get better, like, very quickly. Is how I think it just goes for everybody.
Well, I hope so, because I'm not very good yet, but I'll keep working at it. Well, this is a good lead-in to what we're talking about today. Athletes, some who may not be as good as people imagine and others that they may be underselling. Where do we begin?
I think we're going to, I'm going to, not you. I think there might be some hate mail over this one. but I can back up my positions. So I gave you a list of guys where whether they're not as good as people think or they're a lot better as people tend to talk about them. And I think, you have the list. You can just pick whomever.
Well, let's start with the guy everybody talks about these days, and that's Shohei Ohtani. And we've talked about him before with you, and I think I'm with you on this. The numbers are amazing if you look at what he does in his dual roles. One night driving in 8 runs, and the next night getting 13 strikeouts. But if you look at his individual skills as a hitter or as a pitcher, he's good, but he's not great.
I would say that the numbers are, in fact, not amazing at all. That's where I would begin with him. And I can break this down. So I think what happens with this particular player is people, being unthinking beings of this age, fall for the novelty rather than invest in the reality. Put that on a t-shirt.
I like that.
And so you look at him and he has, like, so you're right, he has the dual roles, of course, we all know that. And it's like, people, they're so casual too, these announcers and analysts. Is one of the most amazing baseball talents, one of the all-time greats. So in a way, you have an advantage because he's not playing the field, so he's losing out on like whatever plus metrics he might have gotten there. But you're in the lineup, and then you're pitching. So you should be able to rack up something like the WAR. And WAR has its faults, but I think on balance, it's a pretty revealing stat. So all of the Ohtani, like everything, you know what the WAR adds up to between the pitching and the hitting? This will blow your mind. It adds up to him being Xander Bogaerts this year. And what is Xander Bogaerts this year? He is a singles hitter. He is adroit at doubles. He has absolutely no power whatsoever. He's going to end up with like 12 home runs and have around 60 RBI. And if the batting average holds, he'll be over 300. He has a good OPS plus. But for all of that, like, razzle-dazzle, look, I'm doing the pitching, now I'm doing the hitting, you're Xander freaking Bogaerts inefficiency. Like, I don't know, is that amazing? Like, that seems kind of not amazing.
Yeah, and I think, again, people get, they get swept off their feet by the novelty because no one has seen a guy do what he's doing since 100 years ago, since the days of Babe Ruth, and so that means more to people than the actual numbers, which, again, are good, but nothing overwhelming as either a pitcher or a hitter.
Yeah, they're good. This isn't to say that any of these people that we're talking about who fall on this side of, like, the not as good as people said they are line are bad. I think sometimes when there's any, like, criticism, that's what people tend to hear is, like, you think he sucks? No, I don't think he sucks. I just think he's sort of like a mid-level, at best, all-star player. This is not going to be a future Hall of Famer, people. It's just not going to happen. You saw the kind of perfect storm season last year, and when you look at the numbers, where are they really? They're not these amazing statistics. And it begs the question, okay, if he wasn't pitching, would he just be a 4.5 WAR guy right now already? He's at, I believe, 3.2. Bogaerts is 3.1. And also, the thing with Bogaerts that we have to look at when we're making this comparison, he is, at best, an average fielding shortstop. That's what he was like a few years ago, and now he's probably less than average. So that's like pulling down the WAR, and you're still getting the same guy. Like, I'm not going to be troubled if Bogaerts leaves the Red Sox. I think his value for this team is that he's shown over and over and over and over again that he's a good fit for the market. But I think Rafael Devers is by far the more important player to keep. So I don't know, like, you let this guy leave. How much, like, great, how great can the other guy be who is lauded all the time, who's sort of like a statistical comp for the guy you're willing to let walk?
Colin Fleming with us here on Downtown. This one should be interesting because if anybody asks me, gee, who's the best athlete you've ever seen, the name that always comes to mind for me is Bo Jackson. But it's another case where the numbers don't always bear that out.
No, I would say he's a below-average athlete. And the reason I would say that, people getting ready for the hate mail, we talk about, like, speed. Like, when you say someone's a great athlete, you're talking about something that's just one of the possible characteristics. But there's speed. And there's speed, you can develop your speed and work on your speed and keep your body in shape to retain your speed. But speed is something you're born with, right? Like, you have it or you don't. Bo Jackson came into this world with speed. Do you know what the most important quality is for any athlete? It's health. It's an ability to not get hurt. It's an ability. Same as speed. You're born with it. Bo Jackson did not have this most crucial ability. Consequently, I think most people would agree that he was a better football player than a baseball player. Now, he had more success in a way at the professional level as a baseball player. Everyone remembers the famous home run in, what was it, the 1989 All-Star game. But I never looked at him as a baseball player. I looked at him as an athlete who happened to play baseball. But in the NFL, in his best year for rushing, he totaled less rushing yards that same season than Randall Cunningham, a quarterback. How good can you be if in your best year you couldn't even equal a quarterback? I mean, I'd say you kind of weren't very good.
Well, I say this, having watched Bo Jackson, I have to include the eye test in this. And yes, obviously, if you include the ability to stay healthy, then he does not become an elite athlete. But watching what he could do, he was certainly gifted with more athletic skill than I think anybody I've ever seen.
You know who I would say fits that bill for me? And I feel like we're so reductive often in how we look at what makes an athlete. It's going to be jumping ability. It's going to be speed. But people don't talk about quickness instead of speed. They don't talk about agility. They don't talk about hand-eye coordination. They don't talk about vision. So whenever someone talks about Wayne Gretzky, you'd think he was just Socrates on skate.
Mm.
But other than that, like, he was this feather you could just, like, blow out of the way. I don't know how you can be a better athlete than that guy. But they're not the sexy, I don't even mean sexy things. They're not what, like, sort of Joe Couch Potato tends to think of as the things that make an athlete. Like, you'd hear that about Larry Bird. Have you ever seen anyone, like, with a sort of, like, hand-eye dexterity on the basketball court that Bird had? But, I don't know, was he fast? Could he jump? He would occasionally do, like, a dunk, but he was whatever he was, 6'9". So what is that? It's like me being in the basement, coming over to your house, doing some slams over your son. Like, I don't know. So I think we just become caught up in these things that are meant to be all impressive. But when I see, like, Cale Makar play hockey, I'm looking at how fast this guy moves laterally. I'm thinking, like, this is the basis of this man's entire game. You have to be an amazing athlete to go from standing still, almost gliding, to full speed sideways. But no one talks about it. He's not, like, winning a foot race against Connor McDavid, but he might be the better skater.
All right, where do you come down, speaking of skaters, on Patrice Bergeron?
This is another one I'm going to get in trouble. Sucks! No, he doesn't suck. He doesn't suck. But he would be nowhere near my Hall of Fame. Because, okay, yes, Selkie, whatever. I don't know. So you're a rich man's Doug Jarvis? No, look at here. I'll break it down this way. People can argue with this, but it's all reality. He's supposed to be a number one center. So when the Bruins won the Cup, he was actually the second line center behind David Krejci. I mean, you think David Krejci's amazing? So he's never had a 100-point season. He's never had a 90-point season. You ready for this, Kimball? He's never scored more than 79 points in a season. He's playing with a guy who is going to the Hall of Fame in Brad Marchand, and maybe a guy who is or isn't. Well, I know they switched up the lines near the end of the year, but like a top goal scorer in the league, a guy who led the league in goals. And this man can't crack the 80-point barrier. So, okay, you're good defensively. You know what? I don't think you're that much better than Brad Marchand defensively. You play a more important position defensively as a center. But if defense is supposed to be your thing, just go be Rod Langway then. Play defense. You're supposed to score, and scoring has gone up. Bergeron's played long enough that he's been in sort of like, not the dead puck era, but like sort of the end of that, and then these offensive renaissance periods in hockey. Why are you topping out, dude, at 79 points? He's going to be a first-ballot Hall of Famer. And whatever. It just, that's what people go along with. But you played with some great teammates, and you're supposed to be this force. Why is your career high 79 points? I mean, that's a big knock against you.
All right, I'm curious about this one, because when you tossed out his name, I had to go back and look at some of the numbers, because I remember him as another guy who was good. I don't think of him as great. Am I wrong when it comes to Benito Santiago?
I wouldn't say he was great, but the catcher position, as we've talked about recently, there is a lot of value in a guy who comes close to 300 career home runs, comes close to 1,000 career RBI, has multiple Gold Glove winning seasons, and was an intimidating force as a throwing catcher, who has a 30 home run season and who plays for essentially 20 years. Think of all of that value. And Santiago was a guy who was good late. He was good like in his age 37 season. Now, sometimes when I look at his stats, I think, oh, he might have been a little steroidy, this guy. Like, why is he all of a sudden going for 30 home runs like in 1996? And But there's a lot of value. I mean, you're talking to a guy who's one of the, might not sound sexy, but he's one of the top 100 catchers of all time, easily. Probably like top 70. Now, that's not a Hall of Famer, but there you are. So when I look at that, because it's not just about, like, we sometimes it's all or nothing. And what I'm saying is that this guy is a better player, because I think I saw something on Facebook recently where someone called him, like, average. I don't think people understand what an average, like, baseball career is. Like, Denny Doyle ended up, like, with a career that was a little bit above average. Like, it's hard, right? So I think, you ever, like, look at the stats, like college stats, switching sports, but, like, for hockey players? And they're tearing it up in Hockey East, and they get 50 points at BC or BU, and then they go to the NHL. They play, like, 7 games. They bounce down to the AHL. They have 10 points in 41 games down there. The skill level at that highest level, I think people are sometimes blasé about that. So, yeah, he stands out as one of the better catchers in the sport that's been around for, like, 150 years.
Here's a good one, because it's a guy that you rarely hear mentioned in discussions about great ball players of an earlier era, but he put up terrific numbers and did it all while missing 3 crucial years in the military, Johnny Mize.
Now, you have to give him, if he plays those 3 prime years, so it's like the end of his 20s and the start of his 30s, he might have hit 500 home runs, but that's not all he was. Ted Williams put him on a list. I don't know if it's the 10 best hitters he ever saw or the 20, but it was a low number. And Mize was, what's his career OPS plus? It's like 158.
Right? Yeah, 158.
So you're talking Jimmy Fox territory when you have the 158. 125, pre-steroid era, if you're a corner outfielder, is going to get you into the Hall of Fame. So he's 58% better than the average offensive player over the duration of his career. That's a lot of value. Led the league in home runs 4 times, led the league in batting average. He went over 50 home runs 1 year. And then at the end, he became this ace pinch hitter for the Yankees. But when people talk about the best hitters of all time, it's like Gehrig and Ruth and A-Rod and just sort of like Barry Bonds, if you want to put him in there, and Honus Wagner and Rogers Hornsby, Jimmy Fox, Mantle, Williams. No one mentions Johnny Mize, but he's right there with like top 20. Not top 10, but as a hitter, he's like top 20, top 25.
Yeah, his 1939 season, my gosh, 349, 28 homers, 108 runs batted in. He led the league in homers, batting average, slugging percentage, OPS, OPS plus, and total bases.
He's a guy where you look at his baseball reference page, and you're like, oh, look at all that black ink.
Yeah.
There's a lot of it, right? And it's in different categories, too. It's not like
triples. He led the league in triples 1 year.
Yeah, like you look at Louis Aparicio's baseball reference page, where do you see the black ink? It's all like in stolen bases. It's in that one just category. But someone like Mize, and Ty Cobb's another fun guy to do it with. It's like, you just led the league in everything. Yeah, actually, you know who did too? You know, and it's really spread out over a lot of years, is Carly Stremski. He seems to have led the league in like everything at least like once.
We're talking with Colin Fleming on Downtown. Let's shift gears a bit. We're going to stay with baseball, though, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. We know about the great history of the Red Sox left field. Speaking of Williams, that transition from Williams to Yastrzemski to Jim Rice, 3 Hall of Famers in a row. But you're going to suggest that, you know, there might be a group better than that.
I am. I also have a Rice thing first, too, because he sort of fits into this discussion we've been having. So Jim Rice, Hall of Fame and all that stuff. He only had more than 30 home runs 4 times, I think. And so 3 of those 4 times, he led the league in home runs. I feel like if he didn't do that, like if in 83, Tony Armas, his teammate at 36, that Rice is 39, like had gone for 4 more, I don't think Rice gets into the Hall of Fame. And Rice also had 4, I believe, 200-hit seasons. If you take any of those away, I don't think he gets in. And he had that famous season, 78, where he has more than 400 total bases. But why did Jim Rice have
200 hits four times, and why did he have more than 400 total bases? It's very simple. Jim Rice sucked at walking.
Mm.
If he was any better at walking, he's not in the Hall of Fame. Isn't that crazy?
No, but you're absolutely right about that. Oh, yeah, he would swing at everything.
Like, I think he averaged like 52 walks per 162 games. So he didn't play 162 games usually. So you're looking at like, here, my 47 walks. But you're so feared. But everyone does talk about that lineage. But if you look at the Baltimore Orioles, you go from in the shortstop position, Louis Aparicio, to Mark Bellinger, who I think should be in the Hall of Fame. He was so dominant defensively, to Cal Ripken. And you're talking, I don't know like the exact number, but three of the top 10 guys, let's say, in defensive war in the history of baseball, all playing one position in succession for one team. Isn't that remarkable?
Well, and then, as we like to talk about here in Maine, the guy who replaced Ripken at short set the major league record for the most consecutive games at short without an error, Mike Bordick.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Imagine that like level of, because I think Aparicio comes over in 64, and the Orioles were great in 66. He's there in 67, and then Bellinger takes over. Bellinger, he's fascinating to me because he was just so miserable for the most part. He had like one season, he was okay as a hitter. But his career war is somewhere around 40. So he's getting that war off of defense. And he played less games than Ozzie Smith. But like, if you did a kind of per capita war thing, he has more like war that way as a rate than like Ozzie Smith, I think. So you're talking conceivably the best defensive player in the history of baseball. Shortstop is the most important defensive position. I think most people would agree. I'd put catcher number two. But you just have this sort of like rock. Talk about a defensive foundation. And it goes right through like 96, I believe. Somewhere around there. That's when Ripken has his last year as a shortstop. But I know it's kind of like the pop and the home runs and Williams and Yaz and Rice. But hidden in plain view was this amazing sort of defensive trade-off from guy to guy to guy with the Orioles.
All right, you mentioned the thing that Rice could have done that might have changed his chances to get in the Hall of Fame. What is it for Dwight Evans? What could have changed his prospects for the Hall?
Oh, this made me think of you because it's frustrating for like an Evans person, like it's for an Evans fan. I always liked Dwight Evans, and I remember one time we were talking, and I was sort of like bringing up his stats per 162 games. And they're quite similar to like Carlton Fisk's. It's like 24 home runs, 86 RBI, higher OPS plus than Fisk had. But he was a corner outfielder, and then he was a first baseman. So you're expected to do more offensively than a catcher. And I thought, I don't know. I mean, does that really merit that type of honor? But he had the best season, I think, by some distance, of anyone in the American League in the strike shortened season of 1981. I think like that's the time, like if you were a Red Sox fan and like I know he was an all-star at 78 and he was good defensively, you would have been like, wow, all of a sudden Dwight Evans is like this superstar offensive player. And I think superstar is a fair label for him that year. He did not win the MVP though. The Red Sox with that weird like split season strike right thing didn't make the postseason, but their record was good. They were contending. That was, do you remember that era when it's like, we shall give all the major awards to relief pitchers?
Oh, yeah.
This was going to be something that was done for a while. Like, Willie Hernandez in 1984, he doesn't just win the Cy Young Award.
It's the MVP, right?
Tigers. He's the MVP.
Yeah.
Now, I guess it had to go to somebody on the Tigers, but it was pretty common at the time that, like, these random guys, fairly random, would get these major awards. So Raleigh Fingers kicked that off, winning the MVP in 81. And you look at Evans that year, he's tied for that league and the lead league in home runs. He's just crushing it with the OPS and the slugging, like all that stuff. He's just dominant, and he's playing gold glove defense, and he leads the league in war. So I feel like if he's the MVP that year, that's a big deal. If he's like, I don't know, if he's not exactly borderline right now, he's close to borderline, that could easily tip him in. So if Jim Rice was worse at walking and Evans got the vote he should have had, the left fielder would be out and the right fielder would be in. It's like so capricious, but there it is.
All right. Finally, what about Bruce Sutter and his Hall of Fame credentials?
Now, I don't have a problem with Bruce Sutter being in because he was like, in a way, the closer version of Jim Rice. What I mean by that is when I was a kid, we would tell these tall tales of Jim Rice. Once Jim Rice checked his swing and hit it over the monster, it was just something you kind of believed. No one ever actually saw it, but that's what we said. Maybe it did happen. I don't know. But Bruce Sutter was feared. He was feared like Rice was feared. But Bruce Sutter gets into the Hall of Fame, I think he should be in anyway. But he gets in largely just because he had exactly 300 saves. Do you see how he got to 300 saves? He's like, I am terrible now. I have nothing left anymore. And he just kind of comes back and latches on, like, with the Braves, clearly, just to get 300 saves. And then he gets into the Hall of Fame. So if his career ended when it should have ended, and he's pulling up at, like, 289 or whatever, well, that's like, doesn't really pop out at you, does it? He's not getting in. So it's just like, think of that last game when he gets that save, some random night in wherever it was, like on a bad team, and you come in and you hold on to the 10-7 score for your side, and boom, because there were 150 people there. And now you go into the Hall of Fame because you got the three outs that in it. Crazy.
His ERA in his 3 years with the Braves, 4.48, 4.34, and 4.76. Just what you want from your closer.
On the Braves, the Braves are bad. I mean, that was like the Superstation era, and so I just remember seeing a lot of Braves, and like all these guys still like just rattle around my memory, like Glenn Hubbard and Bruce Benedict, who actually was a pretty decent catcher, Alex Trevino, and obviously like Dale Murphy had been there before, but like they weren't good, and Bruce Sutter was like legendary, like 1984 and everything, and he was intimidating, like Rich Gossage was intimidating, but not because of the fastball, but because of that slider, like sort of like that one pitch. But he's just kicking around. And you know what? No one ever, I've never heard it. They never dispute his inclusion in the Hall of Fame. I think his peak was such that he should be there. But he's just such an obvious guy to be like, wait, someone's pulling the fast one. And it I feel like just people have these blinders on, whether it's with the two-way player, whether it's Bo Jackson, whether it's like with Bruce Sutter, what Patrice Bergeron, a lot of blinders. So take them off, I would suggest.
I thought of you over the weekend. I was going through some old baseball stuff from my childhood and found a catcher's mitt. I think my uncle had given me this catcher's mitt. It was already a bit old at the time, but I loved it as a kid. It was a Del Crandall autograph model.
So was it the kind, it's like before they revolutionized the catcher mitt technology, right? Before it had like the compartments to it, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Like all like round. So when catchers, they would use like both hands.
Oh, yeah.
It'd pop out of you, Del Crandall. And he was another guy in the top 100 like of catchers. But it's funny because like you always hear, you see people like on Facebook, it's like my Nelly Fox model bat. And you look at the bat, and like the handle is, it seems to be like wider circumference wise.
Oh, yeah.
Than the barrel. It's just like throwback equipment. And did you take it into the backyard and have the boy fire a few?
No, because I was afraid that it would go right through the webbing and hit me right in the schnoz, because it's old. And you're right. There's you look at it now and say, how did anybody ever catch with a mitt like this?
Well, how about just the gloves that fielders used, and you look at like photos from the 1920s.
Oh, yeah.
Almost like your winter mitten. And so sometimes it's like, okay, Rogers Hornsby with your 424 batting average. Like, I think I might have known why that happened quite like it did. And it just makes me more impressed like with guys like George Brett in 1980 and like Rod Carew, like a bunch of years, who flirted Tony Gwynn in, what was it, 94?
Right.
Who flirted with numbers like that, where guys had like real equipment
it's kind of like mind-boggling when you look, because I feel like I could have like had some bleeders and maybe hit you 230.
Oh, there's no question about it. And, you know, you would have probably had the ability to get on, and not because of just speed, but sheer intelligence, steal about 35 bases just because you read the pitcher so well.
You know, I remember watching Carlton Fisk steal some bases, and it was like, and Jason Varidek did the same thing every now and again, where it was just the mental steal, because I am not fleet of foot as a runner, but just some guys would like know when they could cherry pick that base. Now with my blazing speed, it would be like, Fleming, don't run. You just, we're playing for the long ball. And I'd be like, coach. I'm like Rock Reigns. I'm like, but Sea Dog. So there it is.
And nobody wanted to tag you because, God, look at the sweat on that guy. I don't want to get my glove on that.
Wearing those uniforms in the sun, like for a game out in like Texas, I just would not. I feel like I'd embarrass myself. I feel like people would be like, that guy is gross. I was into like the Starbucks today. I'm thinking like, am I dry? There are like a lot of hot women here. I'm not saying something's going to happen because it's probably not, but I don't want to get that rep. It's like, oh, sweaty guy.
Yeah, they understand what you're doing. They get it. Colin Fleming, every week on Downtown Colin. Look forward to chatting with you next week about more stories from brackets next Tuesday.
All right, sounds good.
Colin Fleming, every week here on Downtown. Check out his latest book, If You Brackets, Fabula, Fantasy, Effery, Hope, available wherever fine books are sold.